You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
A very common myth says that your biggest expense is probably your housing expense. Typically, households spend between 33 to 50% of their income on housing. But what is actually most people's biggest expense without them even knowing it, especially if their principal source of income comes from employment, is taxes. In this episode, I'm going to drop some truth about how you can make your tax structure more efficient and reduce that burden so that you actually get to invest and keep way more of your money and preserve it so that you can grow wealth over time.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fan, and thanks for joining me on another episode of Real Escape Investing. I got a great topic for you guys today, and it's really about how to reduce one of your biggest expenses. In investing, we make a lot of how to generate more money. And that's a concern that a lot of people have, whether it's in business or whether it comes to their employment income. Everybody's always worrying about how to raise the income side of the equation. But today, I want to talk about the expense side of the equation. Discussion about saving money or reducing expenses comes when you're looking at your household budget. And a typical person or a typical household, if they have a healthy financial makeup, should be spending somewhere between 33 to 50% of their income on housing. But the reality is that most people, especially those who earn above a modest income and who have their principal source of getting money coming from employment, are actually leaving way more than 33%, so sometimes up to almost 50% at the source of their employment income on the table. And so the biggest expense that they are paying, perhaps that you are paying, is your taxes. And if you then factor in all the other ways that the Canadian government taxes you, and so if you think about what you're leaving, first of all, in employment income before it even hits your bank account, the government might be taking just about 50% of your income. But then what happens every time you go out of the house and buy anything? If you're filling your car up with gas, you're paying more tax. If you're buying goods and services, you're then paying goods and services tax, so GST and PST, which is a further 15% drag on the money that has already been taxed at 50%. So it'd be a little bit scary to add all of that up. And then if you're lucky enough to, or perhaps smart enough, I should say, to be paying capital gains tax or business tax, well, that's an additional form of a burden that is being taken out of the money that you're generating. As far as I'm concerned, we don't spend enough time in the real estate field talking about minimizing that biggest expense. And so that's what I want to talk about in today's episode with some real concrete actions that you can take. Before we get into the meat of the show, I'm just going to explain to you how we use this show, what my advice is for how to consume this content. And so while it's possible to have perhaps a political opinion or some kind of other macro social opinion of some of the stuff that I'm going to say, remember that the goal of these episodes is really to help you make the most of your financial future, whether it's become better at investing in real estate or perhaps to maximize the dollars that stay in your bank account. My goal is really to help you make smart choices and take action that's going to have a net positive effect on your future. So rather than having big macro political commentaries, my goal is to help you build your future one step at a time. In that vein, I want to invite you to our next Equity Builders Club networking event, which these events take place once a month in Montreal. And if you want to grab a ticket for the next one, you can go to equitybuildersclub.com/events and you can grab a ticket for our next event. And the promo code that you can use for that is ML5. That's like the title of my book, which is available on Amazon, Mindful Landlord. So ML5 to get $5 off your next ticket. And that can be a great way to get the ball rolling, to be part of a community of like-minded individuals who are interested in growing wealth and in investing in real estate in a way that's going to have a net positive effect, not just on your financial future, but on the generational wealth and the quality of life that your family is going to be able to have. Without further ado, let's now jump into the content of the show, which is to talk about the real drag and the real way that this biggest expense of taxes is likely affecting your financial situation. Like I mentioned in the preamble, we have this myth that housing is our biggest expense. And so a lot of real estate 101 stuff starts with attacking this biggest expense. So whether it has to do with minimizing your housing expense through house hacking, or perhaps living in a less desirable neighborhood. I've done a ton of shows on this, and this was definitely one of the ways that I built my wealth, especially initially in my life, was to make sacrifices with housing. So whether that is to, you know, have roommates and rent out rooms in your house, which is basically house hacking, or to, buy perhaps a duplex, live in a triplex, or even maybe have an Airbnb suite in your home. All of these are ways to hack that big expense of yours, which is housing. But now I think that even before we talk about hacking that housing expense, it's really worthwhile putting your head into understanding how to hack probably an even bigger expense in your life. And that is the expense of taxes. The reality is that if you are earning above a modest income, chances are that almost 50% of what you earn is currently going to the government. And even if you're only paying, let's say, 33% of income tax, if you're taking home, let's say, 67% of your income every month, once you add the way that GST then chips away at every good and service that you buy, or gas tax or vice tax, if you have any vices, these are all ways that your income is being slowly eaten up by taxes. The reality is that you're not using the tax code to your advantage. You are working for the government, and your number one business partner is the state right now. And I know that's not somebody that I want to be a business partner with right now. So in the same way as you might buy assets to hedge against inflation, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, because the unfortunate thing is that if you are working as an employee, your employment income, your salary, does not automatically adjust to inflation. And when we see around us that our buying power is constantly going down and that things seem to be getting more and more expensive, well, that is the action that inflation is taking on money. And most companies, most employers are not indexing your wages right now to inflation. And so what that means is that slowly your employment income is being eroded by inflation, which we could get down a whole rabbit hole here in terms of how central banks and governments are actually using inflation to their own advantage, really, and are actually making you poorer that way. But that's not the topic of this show. The topic of the show is taxes. But so in the same way as you might use assets like real estate to hedge against inflation, you definitely need a tax strategy to help you build wealth. The first wake-up call should be that if you're an employee, you cannot really control your tax burden because your income is fixed. Business owners are able to adjust their pricing just as real estate adjusts along with inflation over time, because rents go up and the values of assets hold even as money loses its value, because that's essentially what inflation does. Assets are inflation-proof, whereas employment income is not. And you will notice in the rest of this episode that actually the same thing is kind of true with taxes. And so it is the people in society who own businesses, who are self-employed, and who own assets that have a very big advantage, not just when it comes to hedging inflation, but also when it comes to paying less tax. Once you add federal and provincial income tax together, for many Quebecers, we're paying between 40 to 50% of our income at tax before we even get to see that money in our bank accounts. Then factor in that GST and PST are taking nearly 15% off the top of just about everything you buy except groceries. On top of that, you could add the vice taxes and all the other kind of things that we're paying in different ways. Your after-tax dollars are paying for your already taxed life. And so employment income is one of the most heavily taxed kinds of income in Canada, which means that light should be going on in your head if your main source of income comes from employment. you should be hearing that this is the least efficient way of making money. This is a conversation that I have with friends of mine who are admittedly, probably a lot of them are high income earners who have corporate jobs. And that the reality is that 100K, for example, of employment income is just not as efficient as 100K even of self-employment income. Because the giant difference between being self-employed and being an employee is that a self-employed person, even though they have the same tax brackets as an employee, gets to do all their deductions before they even pay tax. And so if you take a typical employee who earns, even if they own a high salary, they're paying for their gas, their phone, their metro pass, their food, absolutely everything with after-tax dollars. So actually, you only have 50 cents left from every dollar you earn to pay for your stuff. Whereas if you're self-employed, what you get to do is everything that can be tangentially related to being a business expense, whether it's your phone, your car, your gas, your insurance, your home office, your home insurance, because you have a home office that takes up like 30% of your apartment. And in that case, you can be expensing all of that stuff. Even your cleaning lady can be expensed at 30%. All of that stuff gets paid before you pay taxes. And so it's just way more efficient to have income that comes from self-employment, even than employment income. If you take this a step further, the same is true for owning real estate. And so the great thing about owning real estate is that not only is it an asset that adjusts its value over time, so it's a hedge against inflation, but it also allows you to do that thing where you are able to expense certain stuff before you pay taxes on the income that you earn from rental income. And so if you are administering even a small portfolio, you will be able to deduct some of your personal expenses like your phone, your car, an office in your home, whatever tools you use to administer your portfolio, even some of your accounting fees, you're able to deduct all of that stuff before you pay income tax on the rental income. And then even if the property is losing money, that then comes and then offsets, that loss then offsets some of the tax burden that you will have on your income. For those of you who are concerned that you might not have time to start a side hustle, and we'll get to that in a minute of how you can use a side hustle as a tax advantage. But if you don't have time for a side hustle, there's really no reason to not own real estate, because that's going to allow you to begin to have some of your income be taxed in a more efficient way than to be taxed as employment income. Now, as we mentioned earlier, side hustles. So let's say if you have a side hustle, probably you're not at this point incorporated, right? When you're incorporated, it means that you create a company which is actually separate from who you are. We'll get to that in a moment, because that is probably like one of the lowest kinds of active income tax that you can pay. But even if you have a kind of a side hustle, that allows you to deduct the pre-tax expenses that we mentioned earlier. Now, the other thing that's really interesting is when we talk about goods and services tax, because after you finish paying 50% of your income to the tax man, that after-tax income is then again taxed when you buy goods and services. And that in Quebec is just south of 15%. So that's another huge drag on everything that you're paying. The great thing is that once you have either a corporation or a business, you can register for sales tax. That means that you can charge sales taxes to your customers and then, of course, claim back any sales tax that you have spent on your business expenses. So it's as if you kind of get a double benefit there from having a side hustle or a corporation, because you're able to claim back that sales tax that you are spending on the different things that are related to your business. I will say to those small business people who are always trying to declare less than 30K of revenue, because it's when you hit that 30K of revenue that you have to begin remitting GST and PST to the government. This is not something I understand when people procrastinate for registering for GST, because why would you want to be paying the government 15% of everything that you purchase for your business? Really, the most tax-efficient thing to do is to register immediately for GST and PST so that you can begin claiming on your expenses, getting that 15% of everything that you spend back immediately. And now let's talk about the tax efficiency of real estate. Real estate, like we mentioned earlier, has the benefit of being able to expense all of the operating expenses. So whether it's repairs, interest, travel, insurance, all of that stuff that is related to operating the building. But then you also have this great thing called depreciation. And for those of you who are not familiar with depreciation, it means that from an accounting perspective, it's considered that the building, not the land, but the building is losing a certain percentage of its value every single year. You can use that depreciation to reduce your tax burden in a specific year, understanding, of course, that it's going to be claimed back when you sell the asset. But in the shorter term, the smart thing to do is to always defer your taxes because it means that you have greater leverage. And if I were to ask you, would you prefer to have $10 today or $10 10 years from now? Your answer should be, I would rather have $10 today because the value of money goes down over time. So that's number one, you're losing money on inflation. But then the other thing is, if you're able to invest that money, it means that it's going to grow at a rate much faster. And so I know that when I take depreciation to lower my income and have less taxes to pay, I'm doing it so that I can spend the next 10 years investing the money, growing it, and using the value of the money at its worth today, as opposed to letting inflation eat away with it and also not being able to then invest it for the next little while. Now, the other nice thing to know is about how corporate tax works. And so imagine that you have that famous side hustle and you decide to incorporate the side hustle. Well, small business income in a Quebec-controlled corporation is taxed at 12.2%. Can you imagine that that profit in your company is taxed at such a low rate, whereas employment income is easily taxed at over 40%. You might say to me, okay, Terry, that's very good, but even if I'm making a ton of money in my incorporation, I can only expense so many things. I can only expense my car and my home office so much. And so I'm going to have all this money inside my company that I'm going to not know what to do with because I'm not going to be able to use it as a personal income. Well, to that, I would say if you're accumulating a bunch of money inside an operating company, well, you can then invest that money, move it into a holding company and invest it and allow it to grow at a rate that is a before tax rate. If I were to ask you again this math problem and say, I'm going to give you $100 and I'm going to allow you to have it as employment income. So in that case, you only have $60 to go and invest for, let's say, the next 10 years. In the other case, I'm going to say, I'm going to tax that money at 12.2%. You're then going to have $88 that you can invest for the next 10 years, who would you rather be? I know that I would rather be investing with the full value of my pre-tax, or not pre-tax, but my lower tax rate business income than investing with my very inefficient employment income. All of these strategies are things that you could actually start implementing today. I know that there's really, you know, a lot of stuff that gets said about how the rich, you know, are paying less taxes and how there are these strategies that are really only available to the privileged few, but that's absolutely not true. Any of these strategies, if you're considering purchasing real estate or starting a side hustle or maybe even incorporating a business, all of these things are available to you and they're actually really not that complicated to put together if you just educate yourself and understand how it works. I know for sure that if I was paying 50% of my income in tax, that would be one of the first places that I would focus my energy to try to save some of that money before I even begin to ask myself about how much money I'm paying in rent or how much money I'm paying in a mortgage on my single family home, which would be attacking that 33% expensive housing. I know that the number one place where I would focus my energy is on trying to reduce my tax burden. You might say that, real estate investors do end up paying capital gains. My answer to this is that capital gains is the way that we are taxed on real estate sales is that 50% of the gains are taxed at 50%. And so effectively what that means is that for every $100,000 of capital gains that I make, I only pay $25,000 of tax. Whereas if you were to receive that same $100,000 in employment income, you'd only take home $50,000. Isn't that just bananas? I can't believe that this information is not out there more. I mean, I know why it's not out there more, because if everybody were to hack their tax situation, there would be so many people who would not want to be employees anymore. Everybody would be agitating to be self-employed and the government would be making a whole ton less money. But then that's why you're busy educating yourself by listening to podcasts just like this so that you can work on lowering that biggest expense that is probably eating a ton of your money. I will say, just sort of as a final comment to this, I am not a tax specialist, But by working in this field, by having a small business, by having been previously self-employed, by investing in real estate, I'm always blown away by how my colleagues who honestly at this point in time are, you know, they have good salaries, but they're making perhaps less money than I am, are actually paying more taxes. And I think that the more that this information circulated, I think it should just be an additional motivation for all of you who are listening to this to invest in real estate assets and to consider starting that side hustle, or perhaps even buying a stake, or perhaps participating in creating a small business. If you don't have the time to do that, there's definitely people that you could pool together with, potential partners, or some way of, you know, getting an advantage of that, or perhaps even looking at your employment status and see if it would be possible for you to continue to do the exact same thing as you do, either as a consultant or as a self-employed person or in a corporation. I'm really surprised that not more people are kind of militating to have that type of role or that kind of financial structure. So, real estate fan, I hope that a lot of this content has been useful for you. If you're one of those people whose principal source of income is employment income, I really hope that you're going to take some of this stuff to heart and begin implementing some transitions for yourself. I will just say that getting some advice from a competent tax person, and not just, you know, the H&R Block person or the person who like does a high volume of tax returns, you actually want to talk to somebody who is a specialist and an expert at this so that they're going to be able to help you consider the really great efficiencies that you can create. And it's true, you will end up paying more in accounting fees. But when I think about how much I pay in accounting fees versus how much money I'm saving in taxes, it's a great place to use leverage and just to be sure that you're using your money in the wisest way possible. Because let's face it, you work hard for the money that you earn. And so it's really a shame to be just giving a lot of it away and in a sense, pouring money into a sieve, because that's what you're doing when you don't have a very efficient structure or a very efficient way of catching all of those dollars before they kind of flow out of your bank, or I shouldn't even say flow out of your bank account. Like they flow out of your paycheck before that even hits your bank account. As a final word to this, I want to say that you don't get rich by budgeting over coffee. And I think that this is where a lot of people, you know, get caught up with making budgets and being super frugal and like how they do their shopping and, you know, counting every after-tax penny that they have. Whereas the real place you begin to play offense on this and you get out in front of it is to look at the way in which your income is taxed and the type of income that you have. And then slowly over time to begin to transform the sources of income. Because once you realize strategically that the different forms of income are not treated in the same way, it just becomes that much more expedient to just make sure that you're getting a more efficient type of income. When I say I pay a lot of capital gains tax, like I feel like I'm winning that game, because if I had that money as employment income, I would be giving half of it away. Whereas on capital gains, I get to keep 75% of it. If I can leave you with a piece of advice, framing this again in the way of talking about actions that you can take, you need to structure your income like the wealthy, and that is going to give you a higher chance of actually ending up being wealthy in 5 or 10 years' time. And if we want to bring this parallel back to, again, kind of a sports metaphor, is if you think of how, you know, the very best in the world train and play and visualize and do the things that they do to be very good. If you adopt some of those habits in the way that you're doing things, you will have no choice but to up your level of fitness. And I don't care, you know, where your starting point is, but if, let's say, tomorrow you were to start to work out and eat and sleep and manage your health routines in the same way as a professional athlete did, you would see amazing gains over time, incremental gains over time on your health and fitness, and even just the level of energy that you have. Whereas like financial health and the way you play the financial aspect of your game, which is like so critical to the things that you get to do and the quality of life you get to have, the things, the experiences you get to have with your family, the type of security that you're able to give your kids, perhaps your husband, your wife, whatever it is, it's a crime to not be spending more time to really understand the game of making money, the game of wealth, and then make sure that you're leveraging the tax code instead of getting crushed by it. Really, I don't see a whole lot of excuses on this, because if you take the fact that the two secrets of building wealth One of them is to control assets. So to control business assets or real estate assets that hedge against inflation and gain value over time, as opposed to buying all of those consumer goods like cars or like fancy electronics that the minute you drive it off the lot have lost half their value right away. So that is like the main secret of wealth that people in the real estate industry go on and on about, is to control those assets that gain value over time and ideally produce passive income or cash flow. But the other one is to begin to understand how you can control and then leverage the maximum of money that you're earning without giving it away and losing that leverage over time. My advice is, don't be an employee forever. If your main source of income is employment income and you want to keep doing that, well, then you need to have some other kind of tax planning strategy, whether it is to have a side hustle, to buy real estate, or perhaps considering going to a different form, a status of employment, being self-employed, something like that. So you need to build your own vehicle that's going to allow you to cut your tax burden in the same way as you're worried about investing in assets that are going to gain value over time and slowly build wealth while you sleep. As a final call to action, and something that, you know, you could be doing on this topic, is educate yourself on how tax structure works. If you don't yet have an accountant or a financial planner who can help you structure this and give you advice to review your tax structure and see where it might be possible to have efficiencies, I would recommend watch some YouTube videos, make sure that you get that person in your corner, because they're going to be just as key as that power team that's going to help you make smart real estate investors. You need a power team that's going to help you save and perhaps transition your tax structure to something that's more efficient. And then, of course, I would also like to give you the typical calls to action that I conclude each episode with, and that is that I invite you personally to come and join me at EBC, so at Equity Builders Club. We have monthly networking events in Montreal that you can use to surround yourself with other people who have these same interests and who are not just interested in building financial wealth over time, but also in lifting everybody else up. And for me, that's a super important thing. That's why I do this show. That's why I started Equity Builders Club, is to inspire people to take control of their financial future and really make smart decisions that are going to have that impact on their own lives and the lives of the people around them. So if you are in Montreal, even if you're not, come and take a plane, take a car, take a bus, do whatever you need to do to come join us at our next event. You can grab a ticket at equitybuildersclub.com/events. Again, you can use my promo code, which is ML5, like my book, Mindful Landlord, that's available on Amazon. That's going to give you a $5 reduction on your ticket for the next event. If you can't make it to the event, obviously, you can still check out my book, Mindful Landlord, on Amazon. And then as far as this show goes, if you found that it's helpful, that it's made you think that there's somebody who could profit from listening to it, please go ahead and share this episode or any other episode. You can also leave me a 5-star rating or a review. I do also love to get comments from listeners, whether it's by email or on some sort of social media. That's awesome. Otherwise, you can also grab your husband's phone, your kid's phone, your parents' phone, and sign them up for the show, because that helps us improve our ratings and also get the word out to more people. And real estate fan, thank you so much for listening to my show this week. I will talk to you again 1 week from now. And until then, good luck building your wealth.